Brian Curtis.
I'm Wendy Ring.
And we're back with another cool solution for climate action from the bottom up.
It worked for 2 months, and then it just stopped.
We've got a broken wire. Solder that back together, we should be in business.
And I'm elated.
You can feel the compressor is trying to compress.
Yay! We fixed it!
This is a repair cafe, a place where people bring stuff that doesn't work, and volunteers fix it for free.
On our last episode, we met Carla Bruni, a historic preservationist helping to decarbonize low-income homes in Chicago. And we discovered that she's also the co-founder of one of the first and longest-running repair cafes in the U.S.
For Carla, it started with the question.
Why don't people want to live in old buildings? It's not like they're just like, old buildings are evil. There's got to be real reasons, because everybody romanticizes them, but there's this idea of newer is better. And what is that? So I was already really chewing on that, trying to figure out how to sort of crack this code. And I read an article about a woman in Amsterdam who started these repair cafes. Buildings are expensive to repair. They're hard to maintain. There's a lot that goes wrong with them. They need a lot of work. And we don't even know how to like use drills anymore. We're not trained on how to maintain things. But beyond that, there's just this ethos of newer is better. Just buy a new one. Just buy a new one. Just buy a new one. You know, we talk about recycling, we talk about repurposing. No one was talking about repairing. Repurposing is great and all, but what's irritating to me is like, you have a toaster. Toaster doesn't work anymore. There's like 300 different little components, literally sometimes, within the very simple toaster. And so people, it's like, well, you could repurpose it and make it into like a flower pot. My hand could be a flower pot. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, a cup could be, you know, there's 300 components to this thing that's come from 14 different countries around the world. And one of them's not working, and you want to throw all of it away. It's insane. Like, we have to actually start looking at repair again and trying to embrace that. And instead of starting with a Queen Anne, let's start with a toaster and like show that we can fix it and prove that not everything needs to be replaced.
The repair cafe, called Community Glue, started with two people.
Me and my friend Allie.
Allie owned an actual cafe that they used to host the first event.
We had no idea what we were doing, but I started making flyers and just putting them up, and people just saw the flyers and they were like, we want to come and help repair things. We got a ton of press, and then everybody wanted to be a part of it.
The monthly 3-hour events have 8 to 12 volunteer fixers.
Most of them are not like professional anything in that realm. They just are people who like to tinker. The group now is a couple editors, people who run nonprofits. We have 2 subatomic physicists. We have a pilot. It's like so random. We're like, is anyone going to bring a plane in this month? And the cool thing is none of us really knew each other before. We've all become friends. We hang out even after we run the clinic and we'll get a drink at this local cafe bar and hang out even more because we just like each other so much. Just a bunch of curious people who like to solve problems together. We've moved around. We were at the cafe. We were at a theater space, which was kind of hilarious because it was a different set every month when we went in. We do this once a month for 3 hours. So it would be like grandma's living room. And then it would be some like urban scene with graffiti everywhere the next month. We need electricity, tables and chairs, and we need good lighting.
People bring all kinds of stuff.
If you can like wheel it through a door. It's like lamps are the number one. Everybody has a broken lamp, apparently. All kinds of appliances. We have a sewist faction. We have 4 or 5 sewists. Seamstress is out, by the way. You say sewist now. They have so much work in all kinds of visible mends, which is really fun. So if you're darning a sock and you want like bright colors or even like a shirt, I mean, I have like sweaters that have these bright patches on them and they're so beautiful. We do insist that people wash, especially their pants, before we will work on them. A lot of crotch repairs. That's probably the number one sewing fix.
Carla's kind of the ringleader.
I direct people on where to go based on what's broken and who's open at the time, because I know the skill sets of all the volunteers. And I'm kind of cracking the whip as softly as I can because I love them all and they're all volunteers, but just kind of like, all right, is anyone going to be open soon for this blender?
When COVID started, instead of staying to watch, they had people drop their items off.
In theory, we're like, oh, everyone will learn along with the repair. But oftentimes people just wanted to talk and didn't really want to like learn necessarily. It would actually end up being a big distraction because it's hard. Every single thing that comes through that door is unique. Even if you've seen 100 toasters, why that toaster's not working is going to be different. The kind of toaster is going to be different. How you open the stupid thing is going to be different, you know? And all of that takes time and some focus. So we started, for safety reasons, we would say, please just drop it off and I'll call or text you back when it's repaired or when we've diagnosed it and can tell you that we had to call time of death on it, or when we can tell you that you actually need to buy a certain part for it. And this is how you'd fix it if you want to do it, or you can bring it back next month and we'll fix it for you. Because we're actually able to fix a lot more things that way, we have kept that model going.
They still explained how each article is fixed.
When I was trying to explain this initially, everyone expected me to talk about repurposing. I'm like, no, it's this thing and it stays this thing. We're not recycling it and mushing it down into something and creating something new. And we're not repurposing it and turning it into something that's a downgrade, frankly, most of the time from what it's actually capable of doing. We're just repairing it and honoring it in its current function. Once you've repaired something that people didn't think could be repaired, it becomes this magical object to them. They're just like, I can't believe you brought this back from the dead like Lazarus. And it becomes cherished. I really believe it helps people value what they have more. And also it helps people see that things can be repaired.
There are now thousands of repair cafes across the US and around the world.
And on average, around 70% of the items people bring in do get fixed.
What often doesn't get fixed are electronics.
Adding to the mountain of e-waste in our landfills, expanding at the current rate in the US of 38 pounds per person per year.
And that's not happenstance, it's by design. Nathan Proctor leads the U.S. Public Interest Research Group, or PIRGS, Right to Repair campaign.
We all have had an experience where we have a product and we like it. We think it's good. We don't want to replace it, but it breaks. And then you take it to get fixed and you find out that the company that makes it is the only one that can provide you repairs. And they want to charge you an arm and a leg just to get the product to work again. And the whole time they're upselling you to the newest version, which you don't want. Now you have to get a new iPhone every 2 years. Why? It makes sense for Apple, but it doesn't make sense for the rest of us.
That ought to be against the law.
It used to be.
There's always been an understanding that manufacturers have some incentive to try to tie the service of a product to the sale of a product. And that's generally seen as harmful to competition. There's right to repair provisions in many, many laws. But this all got screwed up over the last 30 years because of the increasing amount of software in products and the reliance on the internet as a part of the everyday functioning of a product. All code can be copyrighted and therefore the proprietary intellectual property of somebody. If you have a computer chip and it has instructions on it for how to operate your ink cartridge in your printer, those instructions in that software, even if the analog correlation of that would not be patentable, it is copyrightable. There's just more power of these companies to control what we do.
Restricting repairs to dealers not only drives new purchases, it holds purchasers hostage to lucrative service contracts.
The more expensive the equipment is, the more valuable the service contracts are.
In one extreme example, during COVID, this service monopoly cost people their lives.
Hospitals had ventilators that were shipped to them from the National Strategic Reserve, and they had to get these ventilators working so they can be used on patients, but it turns out that a lot of them couldn't. We had the physical ventilators, middle of a pandemic. These companies are saying, no, you can't use that ventilator because you don't have the right kind of service contract. Because those contracts are so valuable, they want to lock those down.
Another way companies lock down repairs is by refusing access to manuals and parts. Liz Chamberlain is the director of sustainability for iFixit, an organization that began when two college students wanted to fix an iBook.
Our co-founder Kyle dropped his iBook off his dorm room bed and bent the power plug and couldn't find repair guides for how to fix it. Apple wasn't making repair guides available. So he and his dorm mate Luke figured it out and they wrote a guide and put that online. Today we have over 100,000 guides for how to fix everything from toasters to tractors.
Kyle and Luke used parts scavenged from another iBook, but now even that route is blocked.
A lot of this happens through a process that we call parts pairing, the majority of which happens by a part having a serial number and a device having a serial number and a manufacturer requiring you to use software of theirs to pair that part and your device after a repair. And otherwise, the part won't function properly or it won't function at all. the biggest offender in this space is Apple. More and more parts in the iPhone are serialized. But it's something that we see happening in everything from chainsaws to tractors to dishwashers all over the place.
That's why US PERG and iFixit are working with groups in 28 states to pass laws that restore the right to repair.
The goal of right to repair legislation is to make it so that anyone who does want to fix things themselves can get the information, parts, and tools that they need to make it happen, and that they won't be blocked by software limitations or proprietary screws or other means that manufacturers use to keep people from getting into their stuff.
That sounds like a worthy goal, but why is this a climate issue?
Because while we're busy obsessing about leaving our phone chargers plugged in and turning off our computers, 80% of the greenhouse gas emissions from these devices enters the atmosphere before we even take them out of the box. It's what's called embodied carbon. This month saw a major victory on the right to repair front in Minnesota when a coalition of grassroots groups and independent repair shops took on major manufacturers and won, gaining passage of the broadest right to repair law in the country.
One coalition member is a Minneapolis nonprofit called Repowered that recycles and refurbishes electronics. Maria Jensen is their advocacy manager.
Originally, I'm from Cannon Falls, a small town in southern Minnesota. My whole family, we're avid outdoors people, and clean water is extremely important to us.
Maria became an activist in high school.
I was involved in campaigns around saving the boundary waters from copper sulfide mining. Such a key part of the solution is recovering these metals in a way that is circular and doesn't require extraction.
That's what attracted Maria to Repowered.
We are a social enterprise, and we do work readiness training for people who have experienced incarceration.
Repower repairs all kinds of electronics.
Laptops and cell phones, computer monitors, desktop computers, survey equipment, gaming consoles, anything that we can keep out of the recycling stream and put back on the market. We have two physical stores where anyone from the community can come and buy, and we sell on eBay and Shopify. We process 3 million pounds of electronics every year.
To tell a story of Minnesota's digital fare repair bill, we have to go back 9 years to pre-Maria times, when the organization was called Tech Dump and Amanda LaGrange was its CEO.
One thing hasn't changed since then. Only 10% of the electronics that come into Repowered can be repaired. The other 90% get recycled, largely due to lack of parts.
For example, a flat screen TV comes in, it's not working, but it's only a year old. Because we couldn't access whatever part was needed, it had to be recycled rather than repaired and resold. We would sometimes see huge amounts of Chromebooks, huge amounts of iPads and iPhones.
All going to recycling for lack of parts.
You can go to Napa Auto Parts. You can go to O'Reilly. You can also buy dealership OEM part. That's not the case within the electronics world. There are exponentially more jobs that can be created by repairing electronics than just recycling them. Better paying job. I think it's a more fulfilling job to know that you've put something back together than just taking it apart. There's a lot of empowerment that comes from connecting community with technology that they need. Our team got to be part of a really awesome project during early COVID when all of our local libraries shut down. And so folks that were doing job searches and job training couldn't go to the computer labs. And so instead, our team refurbished laptops and distributed what were called tech packs into the community. And so folks that often are overlooked for employment because of having a lack of past experience, a criminal record, were the very humans meeting the technology needs of their neighbors. It's a beautiful model. There's also the element of folks being able to access affordable technology because it was refurbished, rather than having to go and buy new.
Repowered joined the coalition to pass the right to repair bill after the State Pollution Control Agency invited Amanda to a meeting.
Minnesota Pollution Control Agency was hosting this conversation to learn more about the challenges that independent repair shops were experiencing. There's a group of independent repair shops and some very well-paid lobbyists who made it seem like no one in the world could possibly be smart enough to work on an Apple device, even though they themselves have their own repair techs who they train and give manuals to. But they talked about Apple invested so much R&D into developing their items that there shouldn't be repair parts available to fix them other than themselves. They talked about security risks and things exploding. They talked about data security concerns. I mean, everything that you could come up with. I left that meeting feeling very small. And really, like, I don't think that this thing will ever happen.
At least not by persuading Apple. But there was something about being there with all the other repair folks that made them think, maybe together, we're not so small. And that's how the coalition to pass the Right to Repair bill began. It was truly a David versus Goliath venture.
Imagine you have a bill that says everything with a microchip, we want parts, tools, and information. Every manufacturer on earth is coming after you at that point. Medical device companies, Apple, Google, Microsoft, John Deere, Caterpillar. I mean, I counted up the companies that have spent money to lobby against us, and their total market cap was $10 trillion.
Farm equipment was an important part of the legislation.
Modern tractors, combines, sprayers, and planters are equipped for precision agriculture with as many as 125 sensors.
Tim Veldy is a member of the Minnesota Farmers Union.
One little error code can stop your whole operation. You need access to the software to find out what the problem is. Once you've gone in and repaired it, you have to reboot the system.
And you can only do that if you have
access to the software.
This spring, the tractor all of a sudden wouldn't run full speed. It flashed a code. I had to get a hold of the dealer and they had to come out and reset it. I live between small communities here. One is 3 miles, one's about 5 miles, another one's 6 miles the other direction. Each one of those had a little repair shop that did repairs on equipment years ago, and all three of them have nothing now.
It took 4 hours for someone from the dealer to come to the farm. When I said that didn't seem so bad, Tim schooled me on Minnesota farming.
In this part of the country, upper Midwest here, your window for planting is very limited. May is one of the wettest months. It has to be dry in the field for you to go, and a rain shower comes up and it shuts you down. You can't do anything for 2 days till it dries up again. So there are times when just a few hours can make a difference in finishing planting a field or finishing harvesting a field. So time is one of the most valuable commodities we have out here.
Amanda had never tried to get a bill passed.
I had never been involved with legislation at all. The first time that I testified at the Capitol, and I truly did watch Schoolhouse Rock, how a bill becomes a law the night before to like get pumped up.
Corporate lobbyists made dire predictions, like Right to Repair would lead to exploding cell phones and farmers becoming hackers.
And then it died. And I left feeling so defeated. I come from a family of farmers. My last name literally means the barn or the greenery. And I kept thinking about my granddad LaGrange being called a hacker, which is like the most hilarious. The man barely ever used a cell phone before he passed away. He never owned a computer. He never had an email account.
Completely new machine with attachments, like $1.5 million. Boy, I wouldn't want to be the guy that voids the warranty on something that expensive.
It turned out that the Schoolhouse Rock version of democracy left a few things out.
No one will ever quite know the amount of money that was spent by Apple, John Deere. And somebody said to me, like, bills don't actually get passed during the session. You have to start in the summer and have these conversations. So then once the session starts, people already know who you are and what the bill is. The rules that no one knows unless you're in it.
So year after year, they met with committee members, but the bill never progressed to a floor vote.
And what began as a nonpartisan bill with Democratic and Republican authors fell victim to political polarization.
The number of meetings with especially Republicans that I know took the meeting to satisfy a favor to someone. They had no intention of ever voting for this bill, of ever agreeing to it. Did we convert any of those people publicly? No. Even if somebody agreed with a bill, it was almost always just down party lines. That's where things got to. There were still Democrats that were not supportive of Right to Repair. There are a lot of representatives of mining communities who were worried. There are a lot of labor groups that we're worried.
It might get a committee hearing 1 year in the House, and it might get a committee hearing 1 year in the Senate.
But it was always held back in one or the other. Still,
every year, somebody new joined the mix. So I remember feeling just a ton of support when Nathan and his team started providing resources. That was huge.
We built this network of local repair shops who could talk to their local television stations and local NPR stations and local newspapers. And we've got thousands and thousands of these stories.
Everybody was utilizing their newsletters and their social media. Lots of storytelling, whatever the medium. I remember speaking at this like random bar. It was like geek out night or something. And everybody got 5 minutes to share about something that was like kind of geeky that they went deep on. And so I told the story of a friend of mine that had just bought a brand new iPhone, hadn't bought insurance on it, and broke the screen a week later. And like how ridiculous it was that even though he had bought this item, he couldn't repair it anywhere else other than Apple for a lot of money. I mean, it's real, right? Like how many people listening to this have a broken screen on their phone right now? Or a laptop sitting in a corner that isn't working quite right, but they're not going to pay the big dollars to go get it fixed. It's a very relatable issue.
The hashtag Right to Repair was growing in popularity. Vehicle manufacturers formed their own coalition called Repairs Done Right and tried to mobilize their dealers in a PR counteroffensive.
But the word was out. The next year, when Right to Repair advocates met with legislators, they heard,
"Oh yeah, I've heard from my constituents about this."
But that still didn't win enough votes.
We learned the rules, and even knowing the rules, we couldn't get it done. Early on, if you had ever told me that we would end up working with a lobbyist, I would have been like, no, there's no way. Like, there's like this purest grassroots scrappiness. We need somebody that can play the ball game with these folks because Apple and John Deere will outspend and out talking point us till no end. And if this is the system that we're in, we will navigate in the system while we also try to change the system.
So they raised the money to hire their own lobbyist.
Everybody was chipping in. And by everybody, I mean both nationally and globally, people were chipping in, sometimes probably just a few bucks to say, this should be a thing.
Last year, the bill made it to the House floor.
That was the farthest it had ever made it, and then it died. At the end of last year's session, felt like, all right, we're just gonna keep chipping away, and one day, something's gonna happen.
Amanda moved on to another job, and Repower advanced its next generation of advocates.
Here's Maria again.
I would say our organization is full of a lot of kind of shy people. We're not great public speakers. We're not big shots. So being asked to talk in front of the legislature is a big deal for anybody in our organization.
Chris Olson, Repower's repair manager, was tapped to do the talking.
I didn't really understand what that would entail. I knew that I'd be part of something really important.
Usually we wear jeans and a t-shirt and boots in the warehouse.
They spiffed up to go to the Capitol.
Make sure my shirt has a collar and it buttons up, you know, and we'll call it good.
We were both kind of nervous.
Chris says nervous was an understatement.
I was a bit terrified. Our PBS stations out here shows a lot of the different hearings. So I kind of recognized this room from one of those, the curved table and all the folks with their name placard.
That recognition led to another realization.
It's on live television. Oh, yeah. I was shaking quite a bit, but I had my notes and I just made sure to look them in the eye and make sure they knew I was talking to them. I wasn't just there to read off a piece of paper. Then all the lobbyists came.
Polaris.
The Trade Association for the Wireless Communications Industry.
The Association of Home Appliance Manufacturers.
Technology Trade Association.
The Entertainment Software Association.
The Repair Done Right Coalition.
They were up to their usual fear tactics.
Using the term fly by night, trying to make it sound like all independent repair shops are stealing people's data or doing bad practices.
But this time it didn't work. In May 2023, Minnesota's governor signed the world's most extensive right to repair law, which covers smartphones, laptops, tablets, servers, networking equipment, large and small home appliances, and smart devices.
It's David and Goliath, but David wins sometimes.
It wasn't a total win. Farm and off-road equipment were stripped from the bill at the last minute, but the Farmers Union and the coalition say they'll keep fighting.
When I think about how did we go from that first meeting to it finally passing, it was bringing together incredibly like city-based computer repair folks with wonderful humans that care about combines out in the middle of nowhere in Minnesota, and having some really important and unique coalitions of humans that might have never met other than this bill. I underestimated how big of an impact that this bill had on the world. Like for me, it was just about Repowered, and eventually it then grew to like, okay, this could be really great for some bigger things, but it definitely never felt like something that could benefit the entire world, literally every human that buys electronics. And I kind of think that's what we did.
In the process, some of the change makers were changed.
Having a win makes you start thinking, oh, what else can we do? Another issue with e-waste recycling is we're not collecting enough of it.
Right now, Minnesotans have to pay to recycle their e-waste.
A CRT TV could cost you $35 to recycle. And the incentive for collectors is just to keep charging more and more. It kind of sparked an idea. Why not change the system?
Maria wrote her own bill.
This bill would change that so that it's universal free recycling, and the collectors, in order to make more money, they need to collect more electronics.
It's also really important for everybody who's celebrating Right to Repair to realize that people need to buy refurbished electronics to make this work. And so it's important that when I say you can buy a refurbished TV, that you're not like, I'll just wait till Black Friday and buy it. Nope, it all takes all of us. So let's step up and buy the refurbished stuff.
Maria can testify that refurbished phones work fine.
I'm on my fifth year of using a refurbished cell phone, 5 years after somebody discarded it. I use all the apps that other people use, and it's still working just fine for me.
And Amanda may have just the phone for you.
I have an iPhone 10. The battery isn't holding a charge very well, and the screen is cracked. Everything else is great. And I refuse to get it fixed because of all the things.
She has a new phone now, but with Apple providing parts and software, the old one can now be easily fixed. Did you take it to Repowered?
I'm just like every average human, the pile of denial. It's like the pile of electronics that you start collecting. Time to just put it in the car and take it to Repowered. I feel way more hopeful that something can be used again than I did a year ago. And that on its own is just an amazing feeling. And I'm also really excited when I think about who might be able to get that iPhone 10 and do amazing things with it.
Thanks for listening to Cool Solutions, Stories of Climate Action from the Bottom Up. And to Carla Bruni, Nathan Proctor, Maria Jensen, Amanda LaGrange, Tim Veldy, and Chris Olson for sharing their stories. And to Scott Holmes, Mr. Smith, Ketza, and Catherine Climack for our music.